Before we start, I have some announcements to make. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service, which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it's your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it's your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. I'd like to remind the public that there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete those and return to Ms. Kang to help expedite public comments. The procedure for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I'll ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. Any PowerPoints during tonight's meeting will be posted to SCV Water website. At this point, all committee members are in attendance, and we'll begin with item 9, Pledge of Allegiance. Director Cooper, would you like us to lead us in the Please stand.
Ready to begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all. Leave us here. All right, we'll start with item 2, public comments. And we do have a public comment. Ms. Bellmeyer, please go ahead.
Yes. I'm happy to see that you're finally getting double stand into your control. At least I hope that's what you're doing, because it's been a long time, double stand being out there. And I question what you did on February 7th here. I'm just wondering, the majority of the money went into LAIF. What is left? It's an investment in what?
Just state your questions and then we'll address them afterwards.
Okay, but I would like a clear, precise, because I have it right here.
Well, no, your question is noted.
Thank you.
Do you have any other questions or comments?
I have a lot more questions. They'll be coming fast and very soon.
Thank you. Please stop the timer. Mr. Cole, just an FYI, we've always been an ownership of Devil's Den. Mr. Cole, can you address Ms. Goldmeyer's last question?
Yeah, the acronym for LAIF is what it's called, is Local Area Investment Fund Agency, Local Agency Investment Fund. So it's a fund that public agencies can invest some of their finances in. It's widely accepted as a secure resource for public agencies.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Are there any questions or comments?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to change our agenda, and we're going to move item 4.1 to the forefront before item 3.1. No objections from committee members. Okay. So status of Devil's Den presented by Mr. Rick Vassilopoulos. Mr. Vassilopoulos, go ahead.
Greg, you're up. You need to unmute.
Oh,
I'm trying. I'm trying to get my camera to work. There you go. Start video. All right. And you can see my screen.
Yes, we can.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, Chair Otohosky, and good evening, committee members. I'll be here tonight to discuss the findings of a few consultant reports that we've had produced, which relate to our Devil's Den property. So as you all probably know, the former Castaic Lake Water Agency purchased the Devil's Den Water District back in 1988. The purchase included about 7,800 acres within the district, shown here in green, and another 827 acres, which are adjacent, and they're shown in blue. We also currently lease 100 acres of property from other landowners within the district, which are shown in yellow. And then the orange properties are within the Devil's Den Water District, but not owned by SCV Water. So the original purchase price of the land was $5 million. And with that, SCV Water received 12,700 acre feet of Table A entitlements that are now permanently part of our portfolio. In the past, a small amount of revenue was generated through the sale of State Water Project water to the tenant farmer, but only when we sold it to him in dry years. Currently, SCV Water spends approximately $300,000 annually on taxes, maintenance, the Wheeler Company property management contract, some water testing, and our legal fees. For this analysis of Devil's Den, SCV Water hired two consultants to prepare reports to verify the quality of water and its potential use, calculate the safe yield of the basins and how it has changed since the last analysis, which was done in 1997. And the second part of the report, or the second report, investigated different revenue options for this property as the land has been underutilized since its purchase. So to evaluate the water quality up in Devil's Den, we hired Thomas Harder and Company to analyze water samples from existing wells on the Devil's Den property, as well as some adjacent farms. There are two sections to the Kettleman Plain subbasin. One's called the Kettleman Plain, and the other is the Sunflower Valley. In the Kettleman Plain section on the east side of the district, they found the samples to contain high levels of total dissolved solids in the range of 1,200 to 4,500 milligrams per liter. Also, inorganic constituents were also found to exceed MCLs, which included nitrates, chloride, and sulfates. At these concentrations, the groundwater is not suitable for municipal supply without heavy treatment, meaning that it cannot be released into the State Water Project aqueduct. There is a possibility, however, that we could that it could be suitable for certain permanent crops. The groundwater would not be suitable, our report shows that it would be suitable for ag irrigation if the TVS exceeded 2,000 milligrams per liter. Then over in the Sunflower Valley, also has high TDS concentrations along with slightly higher sulfate levels. Other organic constituent levels were found to be moderately better than the Kettleman Plain, and they range from 1,400 to 3,600 milligrams per liter. Still at these concentrations, the groundwater is still not suitable for municipal supply without treatment, but the water quality here is slightly more suitable for some permanent crops. So the report also analyzed the sustainable yield of the district. This is defined by the California Water Code as the maximum quantity of water calculated over a base period representative of long-term conditions that can be withdrawn annually from a groundwater supply without causing an undesirable result. Examples of undesirable results would be chronic lowering of groundwater levels, significant reduction in groundwater storage, seawater intrusion, degradation of water quality, or land subsidence. To calculate the sustainable yield, a water balance is developed or was developed using all inflow and outflow sources of water onto the property. The inflow sources of groundwater recharge could include aerial precipitation, inflow from streams, irrigation return flow, and infiltration within unlined canals. Outflow sources were mainly groundwater pumping, what could include evapotranspiration and subsurface outflows. The water balance of the basins were evaluated for two conditions. One, using the full historical recharge, including return of flow of imported water. The second, with removal of all imported water to reflect a native safe yield. So here we show both the historical safe yield and the historical native safe yield of the Kettleman Plain area over the last 32 years. We also show the precipitation quantities over the same time period and how the two are loosely associated with each other. You can see that in the past, that the influence of imported water, as well as higher precipitation, increased the safe yield of the basin. And as imported water was reduced over the years, how the safe yield has decreased. You can also see how the higher precipitation led to higher native safe yields. As the average precipitation rates decreased, so did the yield. With no more imported water being delivered to the Kettleman Plain area, the average safe yield is now said to be between 1,540 and 1,600 acre feet per year. And then in this graph, shows the historical safe yield and native yield of the Sunflower Valley area over the same period of time. The yield seems to be more tied to precipitation than the Kettleman Plain due to there being only a minimal amount of imported water ever released into that side of the basin in the past. Since 1996, there have been no releases of imported water to this area. This leads to the safety yield and the native yield basically being the same. The native safe yield on this side is now said to be between 360 and 390 acre feet per year. Finally, this graph shows the total sustainable yield of the two areas. You can see that without imported water and declining precipitation, that the safe yield has been declining basically since 1997. This was the year that the last study was done on the sustainable yield up there. So now the total safe yield of the whole district is now said to be between 1900 and 1990 acre feet per year. So in the report's summary of findings, we find the current safe yield is lower than the 1997 Kennedy-Jenks report due to differences in the precipitation data used in the two reports. The current safe yield is now said to be between 1900 and 2800 acre feet per year, where the KJ report had it between 2600 and 6400. The lower number assumes no imported water within the with the higher number using the historic average of imported water over the 32-year in the calculation. The report also points out that precipitation levels were above normal between 1989 and 2000 and turned to below normal through 2021, and that the groundwater levels show a declining trend after 1998. As for the quality of the groundwater, the high TDS and constituent levels limit its beneficial use. And finally, the average annual native safe yield now ranges between 1900 and 1990 acre feet. So the information from this report was then incorporated into the Provost and Pritchard Consulting Group report, which was to prepare an overview of potential revenue sources from the use of the Devil's Den property. The report was not intended to be a comprehensive analysis, but rather a comparison of the potential revenue alternatives to determine which should be reviewed in more detail. So this rather small table is shown just as a breakdown of what the possible revenue streams were that were analyzed. I'll go over most of these in the following slides. So the first option would be to continue leasing the property to Rolling Hills Farms. SCV Water receives no revenue from this lease unless we sell water to the farmer, but only in dry years, which we rarely do. Rolling Hills Farm would continue to maintain the property and use it for annual farming and grazing. We could also try to find another annual crop farmer willing to lease the land for a monetary payment to SCV Water. I only looked at this option internally and was not discussed in the report. A new annual farming operation may request a guarantee to deliver certain amounts of state water project water as part of this lease, making this option unlikely, although we could possibly increase the charge for water to make it beneficial to the agency. In this situation, SCV Water would have to pay for any maintenance and upkeep of the property, which is not farmed. So the next option would be to lease certain parcels of the land for solar generation. Solar leases usually have a term of around 40 years, and at approximately $750 per acre, the agency could lease approximately 1,500 acres, bringing in around $44 million in revenue over that time. While the solar company further investigates the site, smaller option payments until construction would pay the taxes for the whole property. In this option, SCV Water would still own the land. Some possible risks to leasing for solar are that most solar projects take 4 to 6 years, possibly 10, to finalize their land leases. Also, option payments during this time are significantly lower and take the land out of play for any other leasing opportunities. And another downside is that only 10% of all solar projects ever get to construction. We can also investigate leasing sections of the property to permanent crop farmers. A typical land lease for this purpose usually has around a 25-year term. And the report states that the current going rate is around $440 per acre over that term. So leasing approximately 1,000 acres could bring in around $12 million over that time period. Revenue could also possibly increase in years where imported water can be offered to the farm. With this option, SCV Water would obviously still own the land. Certain risks to consider are a grower requesting lower lease payments until trees grow to production size, which usually takes around 7 years. And there may be a possibility that the grower could deplete the groundwater supply. In the report, the 1,900 acre feet of available groundwater may only accommodate a 390-acre permanent tree crop farm. And then in the worst case scenario, DWR may request a groundwater sustainability plan be prepared. The report also looked at the benefits of exporting groundwater directly to a neighboring farm. Due to the quality of the groundwater, it would have to be heavily treated to be able to be placed into the state water project system. So this may be the only cost-effective option to sell the groundwater. The revenue for this was said to be around $400 per acre foot, averaged over a 10-year period. Utilizing the native safe yield at 1900, this could lead to a revenue of around $760,000 per year on average. It also may be possible to exchange Table A water for the groundwater, and then we would still own the property with this. As for possible risks, upgrades to the existing infrastructure could be very expensive, but could possibly be paid by the grower. If the water was exported from the Sunflower Valley, where the safe yield is found to be only 360 or 390 acre feet per year, the groundwater in this basin could easily be depleted. The 1,600 acre feet of sustainable yield in the Kettleman Plain is also relatively small, but could find the same problems. Both issues could possibly trigger the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, and a groundwater sustainability plan could be requested, even though the Kettleman Plain subbasin is currently designated a low priority basin. So the sale of easements is another possibility, although not exactly a giant revenue stream. Most permanent easements would consist of a one-time payment for a small amount compared to other options, although there may be additional value in certain types of easements, such as a pathway to the ARCO substation for a solar company, or conveyance of water from the state water project turnout on our property to an adjacent property. Short-term easements could also be allowed, but don't generate much revenue. There would be no cost to SCV Water for these options, and we would still own the land. But entering into these types of agreements could make leasing certain parcels more difficult. Then a relatively new option would be to use the property or portions of it for mitigation banking. The benefits of these are largely unknown and would depend on the cost of the habitat restoration, whether they were viable. The report shows that it may be possible to market the land for mitigation purposes at a rate somewhere between $5,000 and $30,000 per unit, and we would still own the land. Downsides to this would be the cost of habitat restoration, cost of design and CEQA permitting, and difficulty in projecting revenues. And as these mitigation banks would need to remain in their restorative state forever, SCV Water would have a difficult time selling the property in the future. And then the last option I'll discuss is the outright sale of the property. Through a very loose evaluation of the property by Provost and Pritchard's real estate sub-consultant, he said white lands in the San Joaquin Valley with no water rights, but good groundwater quality are said to be worth approximately $10,000 per acre. The report also stated that much of the land in the area is in overdraft and worth less than this. Since Devil's Den is not in overdraft, but does have marginal water quality, the going rate is said to be between $6,700 and $11,000 per acre, which would on an average be approximately $77 million at $9,000 per acre. Selling the property would relieve the agency from any maintenance costs and liability concerns and save us $300,000 per year with the State Water Project Table A water remaining with SCV Water. The downside to selling the property is that we would no longer own the property, and the sale of the property may involve the Surplus Lands Act. SCV Water would also be losing out on any revenue from other options, with any of these other options, which may exceed the sale price over time. So in conclusion, the agency would probably benefit most by the conjunctive use of the most beneficial uses from the report, with solar leasing and permanent crop leasing leading the way. Easements could be sold as long as they don't interfere with large revenue stream leases, while exporting water might have its challenges. And leaving the property the way it is costs SCV Water approximately $300,000 per year, and the liability associated with its management. Mitigation banking could be a possibility, but future sale of the property may be hindered by this. And then there is the outright sale of the property, which is really only worth what somebody is willing to actually pay. Be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Before we go into community discussions, we have some public comments from people attending here in public. Let's start with Mr. Jeff Gibbons. Gibbons, go ahead.
So we, Pistachio is, we have three partners out there that we planted about 900 acres of pistachios just west of this property. And so we're probably a viable source for to be benefit to the district. And looking at everything that Rick just brought out, I really don't see any farmer going out there and planting any permanent crops if they only, at least on the Pyramid Hills, I just have the Pyramid Hills portion, about 390 acre feet of water a year, and the pistachio trees need about 4 acre feet of water. So you only have about 100 acres that you could plant on that 16. How many acres was that? So, but we would have some interest in rehabbing some of the wells in that area, trying to get some water from that. The pistachios will do okay on the 2000 TDS of salts. And we would also be interested in putting in an easement for pipeline. You guys are sitting between us and the California Aqueduct. And if we can get water up to our pistachio ranch, that'll help our trees with some sweeter water, per se. So we'd be willing to pay for an easement. I'm not sure of the $500 per acre for a permanent easement. If that's a 10-foot easement going through, that would be so much acres. It's not going to be a whole lot of acres, but we would really appreciate that. And we could, and we may be able to work out something with the, leasing the land at a rate, or, but what we've been interested in doing is rehabbing some of the wells out there. What kind of happens in that area? If the rain in the mountains, it comes down and it goes on to our ranch, and then we run our wells, and whatever leaves our property flows into your ranch. And then from there, it goes into the Devil Water. So once it leaves that aquifer, it's going into an aquifer that has a TDS of about 9,000, which isn't good for anybody. So kind of have to grab it when you can. And so we've got probably a next other open area in that area. Open ground for solar is really not much of a viability. There's hundreds of thousands of acres out there you can put solar on all over the place. So there's a lot of the, I don't know if you have any other farmers that would want to be, if Rick found anybody that would be interested in leasing the land, but or farming, but it's just cattle ground. You saw the picture of it. It's not a real pretty sight. Without water, it's not worth much.
Thank you, Mr. Gibbons. Have you submitted your request to SCD Water, to Mr. Gall, or to Rick?
Yeah, maybe Chase can do that. We have Chase as our water consultant, and he's been trying to come up with a plan
just for purposes. Mr. Hurley, can you go ahead and address?
Yeah, excuse my voice. I started to lose it this morning. I'm Chase Hurley, and I work with Jeff and Seth Pistachio. I'm out of Las Banas, but I work with him on this ranch. So he's absolutely right. So I've been working with Rick for the last 2 or 3 years, and I really appreciate his patience and the board sort of working with us. I've actually attended a couple of your board meetings. But the vision is Pyramid Hills Pistachio Ranch is on the western boundary of Devil's Den. And what we're looking for is two things, and we want to work in partnership with the district, the agency, is one is access to the California Aqueduct system. And that'll do two things. One is it'll allow Seth Pistachio access to surface water, and it will start creating a conjunctive use program out there, where not only are we pumping groundwater and doing it viable and the way we've always done it in terms of good stewards of the property, but bringing in supplemental surface water supply. So if we can get hooked up to the canal, it would be our priority, and we'd have to go out and find the supplemental water. And then we would wheel it through the Department of Water Resources to that turnout and out to our property. So Fenton has a long history, and they're pretty diverse in the San Joaquin Valley with a state water contractors or a federal water contractor. So the ability to go out and find supplemental water in certain year types and bring it out there is very viable. It can be done, but we just need access to the canal. So that's one thing we've been working with Rick on, is what it would take to potentially work with your agency about getting an easement to the canal. A 3 or 4 mile easement, right, to hook into the existing turnout or work with DWR on a new turnout and then head directly west. So that was the first thing. And then the second thing is that property currently has, your property currently has some old wells to the east of us. We're not sure what type of shape they're in, but we thought that maybe we could work in conjunction with the agency about maybe on our dime, going out and rehabbing and doing some work on some of those wells, see how deep they are, see what the standing water level is, maybe do some test pumping to see what the water quality is, sort of ground truth, what Provost and Pritchard and your engineers were talking about. And maybe there's a way that we can help manage a few of those wells and bring it onto our property, obviously pay you for the resource. We would rehab the wells, pay you for that resource, negotiate a price. And we could work with our well field and some of your wells, along with bringing in surface water to sort of conjunctively use the groundwater basin. So we stay in compliance. We don't want to have to go down the path of putting together a groundwater sustainability plan for that area. There's not a whole lot of water out there. 1,000 acres of pistachios, we're not looking to pump enough water to take care of half that demand. We would just like to supplement what we have and to do it with some strategic partners like yourself. One other thing I will say, because Rick brought a couple different options up there, is because we do have assets in state water project lands in the San Joaquin Valley and federal water project lands, there is the potential that we could work with you folks that for the ability to move groundwater off your property, or maybe in some years you have excess surface water that we can buy from you, or you have various different types of surface water, we can actually, I'll call it exchange or give you back surface water in certain year types. We have the ability to bank water in the San Joaquin Valley. We could pull some water out of storage and pay you back whatever amount we've worked with. But we do have some flexibility in the numerous districts we farm in to be able to be a ag urban partner with you. It won't be in a huge scale, but I think on a scale that when you need some water, we can pay you back. And maybe in certain year types, you can help us. We're not looking to expand our acreage. It's a very mature orchard. It's been out there for a while. We're not looking to expand acreage and pull more water off the system, off the groundwater system.
Okay.
We're just looking to buy a little bit. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming today. Are there any comments from the public now? Any comments virtually? Right. Rick, can you comment on both of these gentlemen's statements?
Yeah, I've been working, you know, relatively close with Chase over the last couple of years. We haven't really gone to the committee or board with any set asks from them yet. This is kind of the first time that I've actually had something in writing from them. There's no monetary amounts. Everything would have to still be, you know, worked out if we do decide that we want to do business with them. But again, everything's obviously got to go through the committee and through the board of directors to see if that's, you know, anything that they're asking for would be viable.
Okay, understood. Okay, we open up to the committee comments, questions. Directors, Kirk?
In the past, we've been approached by energy companies and we. I think you've reported to the committee previously that Southern Power and its successor agencies didn't perform, and then we were approached by 8 Minute Energy. But can you update us on the status of any offers or that are out there that are still in place for solar energy?
Sure. Sure. So the 8 Minute Energy people, I believe they changed their name, but they're still interested in lands in Kings County, still in the, I think the 1,000 to somewhere in the 1,000 to 2,000 acre range. And then on the Kern County side, we've got a couple small developers, also small solar developers that have contacted us. But the bigger player down there is Recurrent Energy. They're the ones that we were close to getting an easement from Route 33 over to the east to get as a construction easement to get to their existing planned solar field. When talking to them, they still want that easement. And they were also interested in possibly another 1,000 to 2,000 acres on the Kern County side to increase the size of their solar facility to the east. So that's kind of the two and a half players that are still kind of in the works right now.
Is Recurrent Energy to say that they might be interested in development? Would we still be in that full, you know, 5 to 10 year time frame waiting to get in the queue for anything up to the Archon substation? Or
I think they're both in the queue. I'm assuming definitely Recurrent is, because they've got a they have plans to build on that property to the east, and our land would just be to expand that. But yeah, they're probably still doing all of their due diligence out there. They're definitely in the option part with the neighboring farmer. So it still could be 3, 4, 5 years for them to sign an actual lease. I haven't talked to them much. I wanted to get kind of through the committee and the board to see where we kind of are lying before I actually contact them again. I really want to get their hopes up when I don't have the authority to pull the trigger on anything. So I kind of wanted to get through committee first and get through the board meeting to just make sure that we're all on the same page.
Okay. Thank you for the update.
Thank you. Dr. Cooper?
Thank you. If you don't mind, I'll ask the gentleman a couple of questions. So you have water, it's fed water that you can wheel
Rick,
through the
can
state
you put
system.
Up your map of Devil's Den so we can have an idea of what section we're talking about.
Sure. Yeah, you're up above Sunflower on the other side, the gap up there, yeah.
Yeah, on the very west end.
Yeah, we're on the west side of 33.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have access to fed water, and that's what you're talking about, that we could exchange water with you or work out arrangements.
Yeah, so we have access to federal water, which would be a little more work because it has to be delivered through a state facility, but that's definitely done. But we also have access to state water, project water. And wheeling that would be fairly easy because you're already in the state system. So we farm.
How do you have access to state water?
Oh, we farm in some state water project agricultural districts in the valley, sure, along Interstate 5.
So are you part of Westlands or are you?
Westlands is a federal entity. So they do farm in Westlands. That's federal water. But they also farm in Lost Hills Water District and a few others that are state water project contractors in Kern County.
So is this part of like Vidovich? Is this?
No, not at all. No. The Pistachio is a whole, they're a diversified farmer. They have been historic, mostly all pistachios, but they're very diversified within the valley. Yeah, both state and federal water contractors.
Your banking abilities, is that tied to the current water bank or?
Yes, Kern Water Bank, and they don't right now currently own storage rights in semi-tropic water storage district, but they farm there. So there is the ability at times to be able to purchase storage in semi-tropic, which they're a farmer there as we speak now.
I see.
Hey, Ray, could you share your screen again so we can see the map?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I can. You have a really good picture of it. I can show you their property.
Yeah, please do. Can you pull it up?
This one here?
Next one, I think. That shows a little bit.
The one that shows the two. Two down.
Right there.
That's what, okay.
Do you mind if I...
Yeah, please go ahead.
Stand up and watch it.
Yeah, their property is kind of the... You can see where it's green to the left of that Dagny... where it says Dagny Gap, I think is the,
right,
the Sutton Farm.
Yeah, this is the pistachios here. And so, and this is obviously the coastal branch of the aqueduct. So we would like to come down here at the intersection of 33 and tie in here, which your existing turnout is that you have with your local farmer, and then just move it right down that, I call it the county road, and come down here. Right now, Seton has a series of wells on the property that all plumb into this reservoir system, and then they bring the water out of the reservoir and pressurize it, and it's all drip or micro sprinklers.
Thank you.
And then you said you'd be willing or interested in rehabbing some of those wells that we have over on where producers used to be. And
yeah, there's some wells there. Over this area. But yes, and we're not sure, you know, how productive they were or what the quality is, but we'd be willing to go out there and do some due diligence in conjunction with you to sort of see what's out there to maybe facilitate some supplemental water over to here. That's correct.
Yeah. And there's a whole series of wells that are. That seems to be quite a lot of the property.
Oh, I didn't realize there were up on that end.
Yeah.
Down the other end.
Do we have an inventory of all these wells and their status?
We do. Yeah, we do. I think there's 32 total wells. I think there's 9 on that side of the property. 8 or 9. One is destroyed, I know for sure. The other one, I think none of them have been used in years. But we did take some of our water samples for these reports from a few of those wells on that side.
Okay, understood. I have a question for you, Rick. I'm just going to say Rick.
That's easy.
Okay, Provost, appreciate it. Have they approached any venture capitalists in Silicon Valley that would be interested in some sort of like a concentrated solar thermal plant that would use groundwater as jacket water, as cooling water, anything like that?
That was not that was not one of the options that they came up with. I'm pretty sure that might be a little maybe too advanced for the scope of what their work originally was. if there's new options that are out there, such as this, that we can look into, the, you know, that's just as good. If we have other options, the more options, the better, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I ask is, you know, that concentrated solar thermal plant off the I-15 on the way to Vegas, I mean, that ended up as a failure. There's definitely a need to save energy in one form of another, excluding, you know, lithium batteries. Because, you know, when you use wind and solar, you know, during nighttime or no wind or very high winds, you can't really use those kind of plants. Do you know if Provost and Pritchard advertised this land to anyone else, or were they just or not really?
They did not. That wasn't part of their scope. We're actually, Mr. Cole and I and Ali are going to be setting up some meetings with some people to possibly help us get to that point where we're not waiting for people to come to us, that we're actually reaching out to try to find people that would be interested in things like you're saying, or, you know, regular solar or, you know, the best options for the property. So that was kind of going to be our next step.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I may add one thing. I think at the beginning, when the scope of work was developed with the guidance from the board, there was a certain number of options that were asked to be investigated, and that's what was done. I think the purpose of this presentation is to show where we stand with all of these different options at this point, and looking forward for if there is specific options that the board would like staff to further investigate. Because again, you know, this study doesn't provide all the details about each one of those options. There is a lot of information that need to be collected about each one of those options. And at this level, I think we'll call it the planning level. If we want to make it on a decision-making level, we might need to specifically pick a couple of options, and then we can further that into development and looking into development scope and looking into options that we didn't look into before.
Okay. So is it... all right. So, you know, the vendor that we use, Provost and Pritchard, has their job been completed? Can we still utilize their services, or that report is that's it? And we would have to enter into another contract for them?
Pretty much their contract is used up right now. I think they had a couple of meetings that they could have come to if we needed them to, but it would have to probably be a new contract if we were to use them again to move forward with anything else.
How much did we pay for him for this report? On top of your head.
I want to say between 50 and 60,000.
One other question for Rick. How much is our Kim Wheeler contract?
It is not a lot. He charges us $1,200 a month. So it's around $6,000, I think. It's not 6 to 10. I think it's between 6 and 10, depending if we ask him to do other stuff than his normal one day a month up there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. President Martin.
Thank you, Chair Ozahosky. Rick, it sounds like you've got a ways to go yet before we can put some details in a form such that the committee and the board can make a true evaluation of which way to go. I think, of course, we'd love to be able to recover our cost of operation. And I guess the bottom line is we want to do what's best for our ratepayers and our agencies.
Right.
I'm not sure I see enough information to make that determination, unless I'm missing something. All the new information we just heard tonight, and you're added, quoting you, this is the first time you've ever seen anything in writing from the farmers. So are you intending to bring this back with a little more detail? Are you looking for a firm direction tonight?
I don't think we're looking for a firm direction, but One of the questions was, is this level of presentation worth showing to the rest of the board? I guess that would be the main outcome of this. But yes, this was just a matter of these reports are basically to see which direction we can go to basically evaluate other options. I mean, there's some options that may or may not, that probably aren't valid anymore, such as the, let's see, what's not, you know, just standard easements and parse and less or like 1 year easements. And, you know, there are still a lot of options that we can do, but we were hoping to pare it down a little bit, but if there's not enough information here, there are the reports to read, I suppose, that would have more information. We didn't want to, Mr. Cole can kind of go into why we didn't have that available to you, but there is, you know, these are, the reports are pretty in depth for what they were asked to do. There's quite a bit of information in there.
Well, to answer your question, I think it does have a value to the board as far as a general status update and to kind of bring the board up to date on where we are with looking at the various options. If in fact you can perhaps include what you've heard tonight and what you have in writing as one of the other options, if in fact we think it's a feasible proposal for the agency.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with President Martin. Director Marks?
Yeah, but just looking at this, it appears that there are, certain options that might produce more revenue, such as the solar, although, as Rick has indicated, the number of solar facilities that actually get built are relatively small, but that seemed to be one of them that would be worth continuing to investigate. Personally, I'm also very interested in the proposal or the concept that Mr. Hardy presented with respect to access to backed water, if indeed we can gain access to the dry your water supply in exchange for an easement and access to groundwater on our, that's currently on our property. My recollection is that there may be some limitations on access to the current water bank for urban users, but if this is done in conjunction with an agricultural partner, perhaps that's something that can be worked through. But given the future of California water, if there's an ability to get some drier water supply in the aqueduct for us, I think that's definitely something once you run to ground here.
Okay. Yeah, Dr. Cooper.
Yeah, I agree with Dirk. This was purchased not to the ranch. We purchased it from producers' cotton to the water supply that went with it, the 12,700 acres. And we've been very successful with that. And we use that water during the dry years and bring it up here. And then the wet years, the farmer can use whatever he needed. And that pretty well took care of the maintenance up there by the farmer doing that. But, I don't want to see us look at selling it. I think it's been a good asset. And I think we keep that asset. But I think there may be some opportunities, like Dirk is saying, that if we can work with other people that have access to the Kern Water Bank or Semitropic, that we can do some water swaps and look at it as a potential for drier supplies, I think it would be very good. I think that's what we need, is drier supply. All of us need that. It's going to be dry again soon, I'm sure. So, yeah, I think if we headed in that direction, I think that would be helpful in places where we can wheel and exchange water, I think would be excellent.
Okay. All right. Well, Rick, you received a written request from Mr. Hurley and Mr. Givens. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for submitting that to Rick. I don't think we're ready to present this to the full board since you see there's another option on the table. So, committee, are you in agreement to send this back to staff and then present again when all possible opportunities are presented? We can evaluate and then bring it to the board.
Yeah. Solar just seems to, you know, we've been dealing with them for how many years? And now with the changes in net energy production, I don't know where solar is going to go.
But. Well, that's why it's going to be viable, because the net metering knocks out rooftop solar.
Oh, it's just rooftop stuff. Yeah.
These are the entrepreneurs that are going to sell the power to people that are going to pay for it through the utilities. And, you know, also with SB 1020, and the mandate to accelerate the renewable power supply for the entire state water project, I think that's a new development that occurred while this work was underway. I don't think we scoped the work with Provost to be a solar expert, but we are looking to kind of explore that further with a more expert firm in that area to see what else we might determine before we either write it off or commit to it. So I do think some more time would be appropriate.
I mean, that groundwater, when we looked at it, clear back with KJ years ago, and we thought we could get about 5,000 acre feet a year off of the property, and it could be treated. You know, it's very expensive, and then how do you get rid of the salt and all that stuff? But there was a farmer to the west that was interested in a pipeline and taking it over to almonds and pistachios that could handle the salt water. And I think there was an opportunity there for a two-for-one exchange kind of thing by providing them two, we'd get one back on the state project, that kind of thing. So I don't know if that was going to be the number, but that was where it was. So I think there's some opportunities there to do those guys.
Mr. Stone, do we... So exploring these other avenues, do we have the bandwidth to do it internally, or would we hire another?
No, that's a pretty specialized question. And that's one of the things we've come to realize is we've been mainly acting as a potential place for our developer, and we've sort of passively accepted auction payments while the work was done. I think we want to do a little more exploration of what the real potential is and where the constraints are. And I think the conversation is changing in terms of state project. There might be a nexus there. Because it's now mandated that projects are going to have to go to rain.
Okay. All right, we're going to send this back to the staff. And
I appreciate the input. That was helpful. Thank you for coming tonight.
And, yeah.
Gives us more to think about and drill down on. So appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. All right. With no further comments, we're going to move to, thank you, Rick. We're going to move to item 3.1, presented by Mr. Cole. Operating budget and minor major capital resources for water resources and supply. Mr. Cole, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Orzechowski. Some of you, maybe engineering committee members, saw something similar to this the other night.
This one's probably a little less intensive. there was a few projects on the engineering list the other night. So tonight is this committee's chance to look through our operating and capital budget. And so we'll do that. If you can click the next slide, Uni. Maybe. You said you had that all figured out today.
Yeah, right there.
We were trying to get the thing where it didn't put the bar on the presentation.
The arrow keys on the keyboard.
That's all right. We can see faster.
Yeah,
you
can see.
There we go.
Oh, that bar.
So tonight we're going to run through and remember we do a 2-year budget, so trying to put that in context for you all. We're going to look at kind of our operating budget, and then we also in water resources and sustainability have capital budget items. Court mentioned that the other night, that we'll be talking about those here in this committee. So we'll be doing that. Just a reminder, we're not going to go into the staffing. We beat that one up quite a bit. The board took action on that at the last board meeting, but I just wanted to remind you in this next budget cycle for the 2 years, we have a few positions that we will be filling in the water resources and sustainability departments. So that includes an admin tech, a senior water resource specialist, water conservation specialist, and a water resources specialist in the next cycle. Next slide, Uni. Maybe. There we are. High level, won't spend too much time on this slide. I mean, obviously, what are we trying to achieve with our budget? We want to make sure it aligns with the strategic plan, goals, and objectives. Compliance with new regulatory requirements. I don't have to remind you all that we're dealing with a lot of new requirements, things like SGMA and water conservation as a way of life legislation comes to mind in that.
Yeah.
Ensuring that we have sustainable resources for today and the future, right? So our group plans, that's what we do. We do a lot of planning. And so, not like the projects you saw the other night in engineering, but planning is something that you never stop doing, right? There's not a beginning and an end. It's a continual evolvement process. And so we've budgeted to help us continue kind of the legacy of planning for the agencies. Addressing challenges, uncertainty, obviously in our plannings, right? We're dealing with a lot of changing things. Climate change is one, right? The weather, we get a lot, we don't get any. And then contaminants, and I have to remind you all of PFAS either. So there's changing things that we have to make sure our plans are sturdy enough to withstand. Next slide, Uni. Just a quick reminder of kind of the department structure. Tonight we're talking about what's shadowed in the red there. The public outreach committee will handle what's left outside that box. So just a quick reminder, that's the group that we're discussing tonight. Next slide. I'm sure you would want to go through line by line, but we're not going to do that tonight. Happy to drill in on any of these, but wanted to provide you the basically the whole budget, but we're going to highlight some things. So next slide, Uni. And so you can really break down the water resources budget into a few main components, kind of what we call our catch-all or professional services consulting. So in that budget, in the next 2 years, it is expected to run at $2.4 million over those 2 years. And in that, there are a lot of planning activities that get done, along with many other activities. A couple of the ones that I wanted to pull out that are a little different than maybe normal stuff that we're doing. is the recharge studies. So we have planned additional budget to continue that work to try to get to a stage of determined feasibility for those recharge projects, both in the kind of Castaic Lagoon area, as well as the East End area. We're also looking to move forward a feasibility study, which we're calling a recycled water optimization feasibility study. That one for us is really, there's Purple Pipe, right? We all know Purple Pipe, and we're doing Purple Pipe. There are many changes that are influencing the potential reuse of water in the valley. So things like PFAS, for instance, are kind of starting to change the context of what level of treatment is going to be necessary at the publicly owned treatment works, so the recycled plants that we have in our valley. So this isn't something that's going to happen, you know, tomorrow, but it's something that we want to make sure we're looking at for the future, is something like indirect potable reuse or direct potable reuse, even something that this valley should be trying to understand better as the treatment standards are going to continue to evolve on the wastewater side. We know that's coming. It's how these MCLs work, right? You have them happen on the drinking water side, and then they find their way to the wastewater side. So just want to make sure we're in a position to be able to communicate to our community how we're looking at that and those investments in partnership with the sanitation districts. Grants, I just want to call that out on here specifically. We're doing a lot of grant work. We've received a lot of grants, which means you have to administer them. So they are the gift that keeps giving. So we've budgeted to accomplish those things. Groundwater Sustainability Agency, a lot of work continuing on there. We've got that at 1.7 over the next 2 years, continuing to implement a lot of programs to kind of fulfill the groundwater sustainability planning effort. A lot of those have to do with instrumentation in the river, subsidence instrumentation, those types of things. And those aren't cheap endeavors the first time out. So that's built into some of those budget for the groundwater sustainability agency.
You mean like temperature monitoring? That's correct. Why it's not cheap the first time out, because it's gone.
Yes, exactly. Devil's Den, we talked about that a bit tonight already. You'll probably recall Rick's number was 300,000. So this is for 2 years. We have it at 800,000. Rick's number didn't include, we budget for variable charges of the state water project as if we were going to deliver water there, so that if we chose to, we had the budget to do it. So that's included in here too. Generally, we're not spending those dollars. That is budgeted for. Source of supply. This is a big one. This is our Buena Vista Rosedale Rio Bravo firm water purchase. So you'll see it here, and then you'll see it on the capital slide just a little bit later. So that is the water that is our firm supply, and we budget for it in the Water Resources Department. We also, in that category, budget for our firming supplies and water banking, kind of the ins and outs. There's cost to doing that. And so we budget for operating those banking arrangements each year. Next slide, Uni. So now we'll just roll over to the capital budget. Few items here. I'll just pick out a few of the big ones. Next slide, Uni. Resiliency Water Master Plan. This is something that we've been working on this last budget cycle. Something the board had authorized us to continue working on. Some of the things that, you know, you've seen in this committee that have come out of that are like the GoldSim modeling. That's one aspect. The board had authorized the California Environmental Flow Framework. We are working on that. You'll get a presentation on that coming up, not in the too distant future. And so that's really the plan that is building upon the agency's historical investment in long-term planning. So it's trying to organize all those things and develop the tools and the information so that the board has what it needs to make informed decisions on kind of the next generation of investments for the water agency. And a couple of those show up on this slide. And I mentioned the Buena Vista, Rosedale, Rio Bravo firm supply shows up on the capital side too. This goes back to a long established process of putting some on the operating account and some on the capital account. It's, we call it Valerie's spreadsheet. That's how long it goes back. So it is a way to just make sure we're budgeting and trying to assign those costs in an appropriate and balanced way going forward. The two items that, you know, we're going to try to use some of these resiliency tools on that are coming sooner rather than later are future banking opportunities. So potentially with AVEC and the High Desert Water Bank, we are in discussions with them. So we have budgeted to continue those discussions and participate in a program, assuming we can get to an agreement that we bring back to you all. But we want to make sure we have budget to move that forward. And then we have Sites Reservoir. We are a participant currently in Sites. And so we are budgeting to continue that participation going forward. Next slide, Uni. Now we'll go into just some of the sustainability stuff. Same thing, line item here, but let's go to the next slide, Uni. Water conservation programs. We have had a robust investment in conservation programs, and we look to continue to do that. I think it's more important than ever with the new standards that are coming out. So this basically pays for our full programs, rebate programs, the public engagement side of it, and really gives us an opportunity also in that budget to continue to conduct research, evaluate the programs, and kind of reinvest in the ones that work well and the ones that don't, maybe we don't invest in so much. One of the key efforts that we're going to do in this next cycle is a water use efficiency strategic plan. So I'll call this a refresh because there's been a couple of versions over time that, you know, prior to the agencies even forming, we worked on one collaboratively with all the individual agencies. And then that document is a key document, not only to planning kind of the future of the conservation programs, right? What programs are we going to embrace and put out there that are going to meet, you know, our goals and the state mandates going forward? But it's also a really key document that rolls into the urban water management planning effort. It is kind of a foundation of the demand side of the equation. So you're looking at laying out the plan by which you're going to achieve the demand savings that are mandated by the state. So that's a key document that is going to evolve this next year. And the idea is to get it. We'll know enough about the new state mandates so that we'll be able to be educated when we're doing that plan, and it will be completed in time to roll into the next urban plan cycle, which is not that far away, which seems amazing, but it's not that far away. Sustainability, we're starting to budget money for sustainability. So as a specific category in the budget, we will have a sustainability plan that is coming to the board here soon. It has, you know, ideas, measures that we could consider implementing. We put some budget in to accomplish some of those measures if the board chooses to move those forward. And you'll also see what we're starting to budget for is solar panel management and maintenance. So you probably remember the agency purchased out of their purchase power agreement with the solar system. We always anticipated we were going to have to start maintaining it. This budget is now aligned with that. Next slide, Uni. A few capital items in the sustainability area. Next slide, Uni. The ones that I wanted to pull out and hit specifically, Purple Prep. continues, is slated to continue. We are seeing it's very challenging to get people to convert to recycled water. So having this ability to alleviate the cost on the customer side, I think, is important. We may have to use other tools to get people to convert. And so you'll see us talk about that more in this next cycle. But we're right on the verge of getting quite a few customers that that are interested in converting. So that's a key budget for us. Everybody's favorite project, water conservation garden and education experience. We have put budget in. And so I'm interested to hear the committee's feedback on this. We have budgeted to do the project. Obviously, the agency hasn't decided to do the project yet, but this would allow us to do it if the board determined we wanted to move it forward or not. So there's a budget line item that would accomplish that project. And the other one I wanted to pull out is the battery storage. So that is still moving forward. There's grant funding, and you don't see the revenue side of this equation, but there is revenue grant funding that is helping offset the cost of that program. Next slide. Okay. And we made it to the end here. And that's, our job here, I think, is hearing back from you and incorporating the proposed water resources sustainability budgets into the overall agency budget. And I will stop there.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cole. Questions from members of the public? Virtually? All right, directors, questions, comments?
Chair Ozahasky, Steve, thanks for the explanation. I think we've been through a lot of this. It'd be great if we had a target that wasn't constantly moving in all of our mandates and what we have to do in the planning. I think the planning that was done prior to my time on the board, long time, has paid off in the last 3 years. I don't think we need to apologize for spending money on planning. I think it's an absolute requirement. Our agency plan, look ahead. This is not the last drought that we'll go through. This is not the last time that we'll have to call upon bank water supply. And adding to that portfolio, I think, is the responsible way to go. And I wish we didn't have to spend as much money as we do on the planning, but it's the nature of what we do. And I'm fully supportive of what you're proposing. I'm curious to see how the board's going to react to the demonstration garden proposal. But to have it in the budget, I suppose, at least you have to have it in the budget to have it to talk about. So, but anyway, thank you for your presentation. Thank you for your efforts across the board. I'm supportive.
Rick Marks.
Martin's comments about need to have a robust planning function for the agencies to plan for our future. Wasn't lasting the investment in our sustainability agents' work. Just wanted to check and see that. There are sufficient monies in there that if we, with the river being such a dynamic system after this year, that we have sufficient resources if we need to go in and refly the LIDAR, at least do some sort of ground truthing of surface elevations in the river after these storms, see whether or not we need to reinvest in those, or those really files that have good elevation control for those critical locations that are being measured when we determine whether we're operating based on sustainable or not. additionally, going to check in to see that the budget included a bit of flexibility in case we need to do a urban water management plan refresh prior to the 6th.
Thank you. Cooper?
Yeah, Steve, I guess it absolutely amazes me how much money water conservation costs us. I look back a few years back, and water conservation was a very small part of what we did, and now it's become a very significant part. And rightfully so. Things are changing, climate's changing, and in the water industry it's changing. So I appreciate us putting the resources into that we need to. Us being ahead of the curve is always important. I still don't understand why we have solar panel maintenance as part of other resources. Still seems to me that would be over on the operations folks, and they can go out there and hose them off and send a bill or however they're going to do it. But thank you. No, I think planning is changing as well, and there's getting to be a whole lot more need in putting together where we're going to be in the future.
Thank you, Dr. Cooper. Yeah, same sentiment. You know, I think the efficiency strategic plan marked for $250,000. Some of these plants cost a lot of money. Just wondering how smaller agencies do it, and we just maybe copy and paste what we do. The Water Conservation Garden education experience, so that was presented to our committee, and I believe the board meeting before we approved it. A $75 million kind of a bet on the agency. So although it's being budgeted in case the board does decide to move with it, have there been any movement and going to any of the school boards and seeking any sort of a relationship, cost-sharing kind of initiative plan or not really?
There has not been any movement. Yeah, so we're still digesting kind of the next steps, Director O. So I think it's a great point. I mean, before we come back, there will be movement. I'll put it that way. but there has not been. We are kind of at a critical point on some of our other initiatives that we're focusing in on. So I'm trying not to overdo it.
Okay. So just because I'm not sure I'm doing this right, but so your recommendations to incorporate all of this into our next year and the following year's budget, and I believe that is going to be presented also to the board. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So
follow up. Our chair. No, I have a follow-up on Director Cooper's comment about water conservation costs. In our urban water management plan, there's a reduction in demand attributable to active water conservation, correct? Have these costs on a unit basis, unit per acre foot basis, is this economical? I know if you don't have active conservation, it's a possibility that our demand will exceed our supply, but has that been penciled out in terms of the cost, recovering the cost that we're spending on water conservation as in terms of dollars per acre foot that we're saving in demand?
I don't know. I saw Matt pop up. Do you have anything you want to talk about in that context, Matt? I got a couple things that...
Yeah, I think the first thing I would say, President Martin, is that when we do our planning efforts, we do run engineered calculations to look at the marginal cost of water and make sure that our programs have and a cost-effective ratio, and that there's a cumulative cost-effective ratio that's greater than one. So the goal is always to have a portfolio approach that saves the agency money relative to purchasing new water. In terms of acquiring like capital deferment, as well as new infrastructure costs, we really haven't conducted that kind of study, although there have been agencies that have set the groundwork for how to do that. But like I said, for us, the portfolio approach is that we look at each measure, how much that measure costs, what kind of water savings we get from it over the useful life of that device, and then we get a cost effectiveness ratio, of which we're always looking for the best cost effective ratio for the agency's benefit.
Yeah, I guess the point being is, you know, we're not spending water money on water conservation just for the sake of spending money on conservation. There certainly is a value to it. Of course,
I think the only thing I'll add is,
and I agree, it's expensive.
You're right. Yeah. a lot of the, you know, legislation is driving the number you have to achieve. So it's whether it was the 20 by 2020, right? That was kind of the first version, the first cut of this. You had to reduce 20% by 2020. And so there was a whole investment strategy of programs both relying on passive, right, conservation over time in a growing community, and then this active side. And so the water use efficiency strategic plan, that's what it was designed to do, was try to achieve that. And it was built to achieve that. We have kind of a new framework now that we're going to re-look at those issues and plan for the future based on that. So that's the only piece I'll add to Matt's point, which was well stated.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt.
Go ahead.
Because those are going to be really substantial challenges with the new mandates and states coming out with getting enough uptake in conservation programs to achieve those goals. In my mind, may take some out of the box thinking.
Mr. Chair, I think one of the things that we are looking into the demand side and the supply side, and we think that the demand reduction or the efficiency initiatives that we're having is really a significant part of our portfolio. And that's the amount of water that's saved by the citizens of the valley in over the last 3 years. Became very significant for us that reduced some of the times that we reduced the amount of water we're importing from our banks or water that we are trying to buy from our exchange. So I think going forward, we really need to think about water conservation as a significant part of our portfolio. And we have been thinking about it that way. That's why it's provided a safety net, additional safety net to the planning that we have been doing with the entire portfolio that we have.
And what will be your benchmark year? What will be your relative in terms of, you know, water conservation methods, and then you're going to be comparing them to which particular year moving forward?
I think get Mr. Dickens on that one.
Yeah, Director O, that's a great question. And the new framework essentially puts the benchmark to be each year. So every year we have an urban water use objective that we're going to have to comply with. And so that is based off of standards of water usage for residential, indoor and outdoor, and commercial outdoor, and water loss targets. So it is a shifting target on an annual basis. So those are things that the strategic plan will need to incorporate and calculate for and account for going forward. So to say relative to a, you know, year, an out year or year A, we certainly could have a mathematical equation for that, but that's going to change every year based off of, like I said, those standards and methodologies that are embedded in the framework.
That's going to be tough. One more question for you, Matt. On page 9 on this presentation, the water conservation programs, public engagement, close to, you know, 1 million for both years. is that going to be shared with public outreach, or is that separate from public outreach?
Yeah, typically it's kind of overlap with public outreach. If I'm understanding it correctly on page 9, let me see if I can find my...
Yeah, there's a line item for public engagement. 522 this year and 538 next year. Okay. I'm just wondering if there's
an additional...
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. That is an overlap. That's essentially targeting, having outreach, messaging... all types of communication messaging with the public. So there's overlap with communication on that.
Okay. And one more quick question, Mr. Cole. So going back to the Warden Garden, $4 million is going to be allocated for the budget. Let's say the board does not go along with construction of this Warden Garden, but there's a need for another storage facility or a parking lot, or a facility structure in that place, will that money then be rerouted for that project, or will that have to wait until the next fiscal year to be approved by the board? How does that work?
Let me rephrase the question.
All right, so the Water Garden at $4 million, if the board does not approve it, but the agency finds a need for that exact same location to construct a parking lot or a facility or maintenance shop or addition to the treatment plant. Although the $4 million is in that budget, will that money then get allocated to that project? How does that work?
It would be up to the board. So we would... if we're not going to do that project and we had a different project, we could look at taking the funds that were budgeted for the one and transferring those to a different project. But that would come back through committee and board for that approval.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Yeah, I think you've seen that a couple of times where we've had a study or something that comes up and we note that there are unused, unspent conservation funds, and part of the fiscal impacts statement in that item is that the source of funds would be unused conservation funds, as an example. We've had, I think that's come up maybe once or twice recently. I don't know that on a $4 million item, that's a little more visible than, paying for an extra, feasibility study or something. But
okay. All right, understood. Thank you. Any other questions, comments from directors? All right.
Steve, is that in the second year?
It's split over to both fiscal years.
Okay.
So it's basically start the project later the first fiscal year, and it wraps into the second, 2 and 2.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. I'll just take one moment to thank the staff. I mean, budgeting is a huge adventure if you do it right, which what I think we consider doing it right is involving everybody up through, so in building the budget. So it's a lot of work that goes on into seeing this final product. So just want to thank everybody that was involved in that.
All right, thank you, Mr. Cole. We move on to item 4.2, status of water supplies, presented by Sarah Flory.
Well, she got to do what you say, full.
That's you. Did you see her presentation?
Hi, Sarah. Do you want to unmute?
Oh, sorry. I shared first and then I was like, where did the mute and unmute go? I don't think I'm ever going to get used to this. Good evening, everybody. So I'm going to be doing a quick water supply update for you. And the picture here is DWR taking the April 1st snow measurement. You can see there's a lot of snow out there. We're going to just do a quick precipitation review, talk about Article 56 spill and allocation and our operations update. So as I said, there's just a ton of snow out there. This graphic shows on the left-hand side kind of where we ended up April 1st. This is actually April 10th. We are at about 250% of normal to date in comparison to the average. And we ended up at 238% of the April 1st average. So there's a ton of snow out there. Who'd have thought? And then on the right-hand side, you can see the precipitation for Santa Clarita Valley. Same kind of story. You know, we had a really good start to this winter, and the current year is shown in yellow, and it's a comparison of our wettest year in blue, and then the average in green last year in orange, and then our driest year in red. And so basically, in the last few years, we've gone from the lowest in red, orange and green, you know, and now we're at in the yellow section. And you can see we still have quite a few months left in the water year. So who knows what's going to happen with this new weather experience we're all having. Fun stuff. Potential stuff on the horizon. So this is the atmospheric river graphic. There's a few things that are kind of popping up there, but you know, there's not a lot of accuracy when they're the green and the blue colors. They get more accurate as they get red and purple. So I actually looked at this. I pulled this 2 days ago, and it actually changed since yesterday. But overall, there's really nothing heading for our area. And then on the right upper corner, you can see the 6-day forecast, and LA is a little bit green, but that's like less than a tenth of an inch of potential precipitation in the next 10 days. So not really a lot in the next week or so coming. But I did want to talk to you about the San Luis Reservoir. It did fill on March 22nd. Since then, the state has been offering up Article 21 water deliveries. And so we're on the fourth week of that. And they actually just sent an email out saying there's more potential Article 21 available for a fifth week. And so what happens is when this reservoir gets filled and DWR can continue exporting water from the Delta, they will offer up basically free water. And that's called Article 21. Contractors are able to take that water. They have to pay to move it, but they have to take that water basically week by week, and they have to be able to utilize it. And you're not allowed to use it for just basic demands. So SCV Water would be able to utilize this type of water if we had flexible storage to fill in Castaic Lake. We could use it for that. This year, our flex storage was filled because I like to have that filled before the year ends. So maybe I've learned my lesson. We could potentially use it in the future to release it down Castaic Creek. But for this year, there's really no way for us to utilize this water supply. But it has been available, and that just means there's a lot of water in the system. So people are capitalizing on that, which is really good. With regards to the storage in San Luis Reservoir, we started the year with about 17,000 acre feet of Article 56 carryover supplies and backup water combined in the San Luis Reservoir. And that's quite a bit of water. I'm happy and excited to say that none of it's spilled, not one drop, at least from what I've seen so far. Which is pretty cool because I don't know if that's ever happened before. We were successful in evacuating all the water through our demands at our local demands, I guess our local imported demands. We moved some to our banking programs, and then we did a really last minute exchange with Metropolitan Water District to help us get that water out of the reservoir before it filled. And I'll go into a little bit more detail here. So this is a slide that shows us how we evacuated 17,000 acre feet. Like I said, we tried to prioritize using our imported supplies because we had so much of it. And as it got really, really wet in January, we did some things locally. We backed off on some of our groundwater production and really tried to utilize this imported supply so that we could take advantage of it and give our groundwater a little break while it was wet. And so January through March, we were able to use about 4,650 acre feet. And the bummer when it gets wet and we want to use imported water and we have a lot of supplies to use, you know, the demands are really low because it's really wet locally. So we did our best to use as much as we could locally. In February, I started talking to our banking partners saying, you know, it's looking wet, started getting some of the paperwork done so that we could start transferring water potentially into our banking programs for recharge. And so we got that set up. And in March, we were able to start pushing water into the semi-tropic program and our Rosedale program. And we were able to recharge about 2,950 acre feet from San Luis storage, which was pretty cool. And then, like I said, we still had 9,433 acre feet of Article 56 carryover water that was stuck in the reservoir. And so to be able to evacuate that, we talked with Metropolitan and we executed an unbalanced exchange. It was a 3-for-2 exchange. So for every 3 acre feet we gave them, they gave us 2 acre feet back. We were able to do this exchange of carryover because of the water management amendment, which says that we're allowed to exchange up to 50% of our carryover supplies or and or our Table A water every year. This is all of our carryover supplies. So what we were allowed to do was ask for an exemption, which allowed us to actually exchange 100% of our carryover supplies, because in this situation, there was no way that we were going to be able to use it. It would have spilled. So DWR said, yes, we will let you do that. Metropolitan said, we'll take the water. So they evacuated our carryover supplies for us. And then by the end of this year, they are going to return 6,289 acre feet to us, basically just delivering that water as we would normally take it in the summertime. So that is probably too much detail, but everything was evacuated and we lost no water.
Good job, John. Good job.
And then I'm sure you've all heard that our state water project allocation has increased to 75% in March. So we started at 5% in December and now we're at 75%. There is potential for it to go up again, but we kind of have to wait and see what they decide to do. As we increase to 75%, some of the things that we've done with our operations, we just keep looking at our operating plan and kind of figure out, how are we going to best operate our 2023 supplies to make sure that we're minimizing all the risks that could be potentially there in 2024 in worst case scenario conditions? And then by doing that and going through those scenarios, we're trying to figure out kind of what that sweet spot would be with regards to how much Article 56 carryover do we want to keep in San Luis for the beginning of next year. And so we're still working out some of those details. And I hope to have more information for you at the next meeting. But we keep doing that. And with regards to our imported supply, so far, the operating plan is showing that we can easily maximize our banking recharge. So we're going to put as much water as we can in the banks. I even reached out to the banking partners and asked them, hey, would you guys be able to take more than our maximum amount? Semi-tropic, our maximum amount is 5,000 acre feet a year of recharge. And they said, you know, yes, we have space. So the transfer or the TRF paperwork that we did allows us to give them up to 10,000 acre feet if we want to go that direction. So just kind of giving us that opportunity if we want it. Right now we're shooting for the 5,000 acre feet because in that banking program, we already have 6 years worth of storage in that program. So we're trying to kind of look at that benefit of putting a seventh year in there at this point. So we're kind of keep looking at that, see if there's any other options, better choices for that water. Rosedale was not able to take more than 20,000 acre feet because they are just getting hammered with water coming from the Kern, and their recharge basins are going to be probably full most of the year. So there's a lot of competition there. And luckily, they will be able to take they're going to take our 20,000 acre feet. And then we're looking at some other things to do with them as well. after putting as much water into our banking programs as we can, there's still potentially some surplus water. So we're looking at some opportunities. We've talked to AVEC and Rosedale about potential exchange opportunities, not just for this year, but also looking at, you know, could we make them long-term exchange opportunities so that those agreements will be in place in case we need to move quickly again, as we did this, the beginning of this year. But this year I see some challenges in just that there's so much water in the system, and the conveyance and the recharge space is pretty full. Every which way you look, there's water. Everybody has a lot of it now, and everybody's trying to do the best things that they can with it. So I think that's going to be our challenge, is just limited conveyance and recharge space. But we are working out those details, and I should have more information for you on that. And then lastly, I wanted to kind of go back and show you kind of where we started in 2020. So these are graphics that show our dry year reserve banking and exchange balances. In 2020, you can see it was a dry year. We had a little over 160,000. And each year since then, through those critical years, we used anywhere from 20 to 25,000 acre feet of water from these programs. And so at the beginning of this year, we were at about, 91,000 acre feet. And I'm estimating that we can put up to 35,000 acre feet back into our dry year programs this year, kind of trying to get those storage supplies built back up again. This is just a preliminary estimate, so don't hold me to this, but I'm pretty confident in at least this much. And if the allocations increase again, there's just more potential for more if we can find partners that want to work with us. So I think that's all I have. If there's any questions?
Thank you. Any questions from the public, attendance? Any virtual questions?
There is none.
Their interest?
I gotta figure out. Thank you.
Okay, I just want to commend Sarah for working really, really hard and being pretty nimble and pulling together this exchange agreement with MJBD. It's, you know, her hard work, but it's also the work that she'd done the years before, building the relationships that she'd had with her colleagues at MJBD. So, great job, Sarah.
Thank you.
Sarah, it's good to hear you here with good news again. I know the meetings have been tough the last couple of years. Thank you. You've done a great job, and hopefully we can get that back up to 160,000 here in the next year.
I'm working on it. Yep. And I'll be coming with some dark, you know, worst case scenarios to share with you soon enough. Don't want you to get too comfortable.
This month off, but we'll be back to talk about PFAS.
Yeah,
that's true.
Okay. Yeah, very simply stated, great job, Sarah. You really took advantage of what we got from Mother Nature, and keep doing the great work.
Yeah, thank you, Sarah. For the estimated recharge, the 35,000 acre feet, when will we know that you were successful in those endeavors?
I am most definitely successful in 25,000 acre feet because the banks have already said they can take that, and we have a 75% allocation. The additional 10,000 is assuming that, well, I know we're looking at about 15 to 20,000 acre feet of surplus water after we have our saved carryover supply that we want. So we have that amount of water to play with at this point, and we're hoping to find a partner that will do a 2-for-1 exchange with us. So that's assuming that we can get another 10,000 acre feet back from a 2-for-1 exchange.
Excellent. Okay.
So that's the iffy part, but we have the water. We just need to find a partner at this point.
Understood. No, we're definitely in good hands. Thank you, Ms. Flory.
Mm-hmm.
No other questions, comments from directors?
You know, all right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's move on to item 4.3, staff activities presented by Mr. Al-Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will try to be as focused as possible in a couple of activities that the staff have been engaged on in the lab. You have a lot of presentations today, so I'll try to make mine shorter. The staff have been engaged with LA County in the review of their water plan. And we are the purpose of us engaging in that, we wanted to make sure that there is nothing in the plan that will contradict with the list of plans that we have internally, and also take an advantage of any opportunities that the plan might open for us if there is any collaborative opportunities or any partnership opportunities that we can find and identify working with the county. Rick Vergoods have been working on that. I have been attending some of the meetings recently, and we are just reviewing some of the plans at this point so that we make sure that there is no any red lines for us for the agency. My second item for updates today is I have been engaged in a couple of outreach and engagement opportunities with different partners. I traveled with a couple of you to Sacramento, and I really appreciate the opportunity that the board members helped me and introduced me to different partners and stakeholders and decision makers. That's I really appreciate that opportunity. Thank you for all your help there. I think I had a really good understanding of some of the relationships that we wanted to build and continue building. One of the other activities is the visit or the open house and tour for United Water Conservation District. And I think I went with Director Marks to that also. And we had a good opportunity to visit their facilities and understand some of their operations with regard to utilization of surface water into recharging groundwater and some of the issues and also some of the challenges that they're dealing with. Especially in a year like this, they have a lot of water, and that's the same like everyone, and they're trying to deal with that right now. And in continuation of that collaboration and coordination with United, we have been in meetings about their release from Castaic. One of the good things that they have, and I think they took an advice from us, that they asked for extension for the release time for the native flow that's existing in the river. I think a couple of board members suggested that here, and I think Steve conveyed that to them, and they went and asked, and DWR gave them until, instead of finalizing all the releases by April 1st, they gave them until May 1st. But they are still struggling with releasing all of that, because now the amount of storage is increasing and increased significantly in the past couple of weeks. And so they are in the process of releasing more water actually into the creek, and hopefully they will start increasing the amount in the next couple of weeks. One of the things that we were trying also to look into is trying to ground truthing the measurement protocol that we put in the agreement that we have for the long-term agreement for releases that we wanted. And there is an opportunity. I just get an email from them before this meeting, actually from Sarah, that they are trying to do a measurement next demonstration next Monday. And so probably we'll need to look into who is available from our staff to go out and tag along with them to learn and look into the process for measurements. Last thing that I wanted to give an update on is we have been in discussions with the LA Sanitation District, and we are trying to, the district is trying to do a temperature study, and we have been doing the temperature collection of data. And we have been also working for some time now in developing what we call the habitat suitability model, which is part of our sustainability resiliency effort that we are trying to do. And so with all of this data and information that's created by the two entities, we felt that there would need time that we sit together and work together in identifying some of these overlap areas and where are some of the data could be shared and how we can build on the strength of each one of those efforts. For that, I just wanted to mention that the effort that we are leading with, I think Steve referred to earlier about the California Environmental Framework, as part of our resiliency effort, we developed what we call it habitat suitability model for the river. And we are going to come to this group, come to the committee in June, presenting information about that model. And that's one of the things that we're working. Unfortunately, the staff, Najwa, who is working on this, is still in jury duty. That's extended for almost about 4 months. And so we're trying really to when she come back, we'll start working in bringing that information back again to you. That's the end of my report. I would take any questions.
Now, before we go to questions, any comments from the public? Virtually? And before we reach out to all the directors, so will you include that on in the June 14th committee meeting? Is that going to be on? Okay.
Yes.
Can you add that to the calendar?
Yes, we're planning to add that to the calendar.
All right. Directors, questions, comments? Okay. And we're still waiting until Governor's Stage 2 conservation ordinance expires in June, right?
Mr. Dickens will be presenting on that.
Yes. All right, we'll save those questions for Matt. All right, thank you, Mr. Awesome. All right, shall we move on to item 5.1. Status of drought response and performance presented by none other than Mr. Matt Dickens.
Thank you, Chair Ozarkowski and members of the committee. I'm Matt Dickens, Sustainability Manager. Tonight I'm going to give a status of the drought response and performance. Can you guys see my screen okay?
Not yet.
All right, fantastic. So tonight's objectives are going to be starting with an overview of executive
orders. We don't see it.
You can't see your screen.
Can't see my screen.
You're not sharing.
We can see only your home library.
Unless you're planning on having this year. Yeah, there we go.
How about now?
Yep. Good.
All right. So I'll try again. Thank you, Chair Ozarkowski and members of the committee. Tonight's presentation will be on the status of drought response and performance. We will talk about in tonight's presentation the overview of Executive Order EON-5-23. I think that was something Director O was just asking about. We'll look at status of state and local drought response regulatory activities. We'll look at status of SCB water drought conservation performance, and we'll conclude with an overview and discussion of our next steps. So turning to the regulatory updates and Governor Newsom's March 24th, 2023 executive order, a lot of news came out across the state, ranging from the LA Times saying Newsom rolls back California drought restrictions after a remarkably wet winter to California eases back on drought restrictions, what are watering rules in the Sacramento area, to Governor Newsom rolls back some drought restrictions and keeps others as recent storms ease the dry spell. So with that, we kind of recognize that in the from the press, as we typically see, sometimes they capture some of the headlines, but don't dive into what's embedded in the executive order. So we thought it'd be very beneficial for the committee to share the analysis that our team has done, that I've conducted, as well as our legal consultant. So what does executive order, let's just look at a summary of the executive order, what it does and doesn't do. The first thing is it does not declare that the drought is over. In the emergency or the executive order, there's no rescission or of the governor's drought emergency declaration across the state of California. As a matter of fact, there's a discussion about the impacts of multiple years of droughts on groundwater as a need to maintain the drought emergency declaration. So it does not declare the droughts over. It does, however, remove the governor's voluntary conservation call of 15% compared to 2020's use. So in that sense, that certainly that call has been removed from the executive order and from the governor's talking points. It has local agencies must comply with the State Water Board's water conservation regulations, including the prohibition of certain water waste activities that were a result of the January 2022 emergency regulation from the board. And it maintains the ban on the irrigation of non-functional turf with potable water, which was a result of the May and June emergency regulation from the State Water Board. However, local agencies must comply with the State Water Board's water conservation regulations until repealed or following expiration, which include the implementation of Stage 2 water shortage contingency plan measures. So with that, the call for the State Board to take action has been removed. Ergo, the State Board can take action to either let it rescind in June or earlier than that, they can repeal it. Or excuse me, let it expire in June or repeal it prior to that. In addition to that, there are regulations and continuing impacts on issuing well permits without following certain steps. So with that, we're still in a drought emergency, and we are still required to implement Stage 2 measures. We're still required to communicate the banning of non-functional turf with irrigation of non-functional turf with potable water. We're also required to continue to prohibit certain water waste restrictions, including those things that are very common, like irrigation runoff, irrigating during rain, or earlier last month snow. It could also mean, you know, spraying down your sidewalks with water, washing your car without a hose nozzle, those types of things. And so locally, SCV Water, we are still in a Stage 2 water shortage, declared water shortage that the board took action on April 26th of 2022. All right, so moving on to our water demand performance. So we'll look at the drought conservation target. That's 15% of 2020. We're still reporting that as the governor's call to remove the 15% voluntary call ended in March 24th, but we're still looking at, you know, 11 to 20% of our forecasted demands, which is what our shortage plan kind of refers to. Those numbers are not miles apart. So we think it's still, you know, okay to look at the 15% of 2020 for ease of communication purposes. We'll look at water conservation trends, and then we'll compare our performance to statewide and regional drought performance conservation. So I shared this before, and it shows our, the dark bar is 2020's production. The dashed line is 15% of that production. The blue bar is 2022, and the brown bar is 2023. And as you can see, stage two was declared here in May of 2022. That is when we started seeing our water consumption start to drop below 2020's levels. We hit our target in September for the month. But there's also a cumulative target, but I'll explain a little bit more about that shortly. Then we see the storms roll in November and December, and we can see our consumption production greatly drop compared to 2020. And that continued into January, February, and March here. So if you can see here, March, we actually had lower water usage than January, but we did surpass the 15% target. But we saved quite a bit of water. That's about, you know, compared to the previous, compared to 2022, our usage is down, about 2,300 acre feet of water in 1 month. So significant conservation from our community. This chart right here, I think it's very helpful to show some trends. It is going to talk a little bit about some comments made earlier about sustainable water use and the need for continued conservation in the community. Because what it does show is it shows that our irrigation use, which is a key component of our demands, has high variability. The range is quite significant. On dry years, it can go 64% over what we're kind of anticipating. So what that means is that if we expect hotter and drier conditions, our demands have a propensity or likelihood that they could creep back up into our pre-SBX7 7 20% by 2020 levels, but they could also, you know, again, there's high variability ranging from 64% relative to the a target year down to 24 or 30% of that target year. So that's a pretty big range of variability. But nonetheless, I just want to show here how our performance looks like since stage two was declared. You can see stage two was declared here in May of 2022. Our monthly conservation broke into the stage two, which is this these two dashed lines. It's 11 to 20%. And we've pretty much stayed there since. Our cumulative conservation, which is the sum of July all the way through March, continues to make its way towards the stage two level. But I'll share more about what those percentages look like. But nonetheless, what we can see is that we had conservation prior to the storms. We had significant demand reductions with the storms coming into the valley here and how those impacted demand. So that tells me that our conservation water shortage contingency plan was effective at moving the needle towards our goals, but that once the storms hit, it really pushed it over the edge, and we certainly surpassed those goals and have remained significantly below the stage two levels. So how's our water conservation compared to the state? Well, first, let's look at our hydrologic region, which is South Coast. For the South Coast in February, we saw 18.4% reduction relative to what we conserved here in the valley at 23.7% and 5.8% cumulative, and we were at 6.9%. So we outperformed the South Coast region on average. For the state of California, they were down 18.2% for February and 6.6% cumulative. So we also outperformed state conservation in February on a monthly basis, but we're also outperforming the state conservation levels in the cumulative. I do want to share here community conservation. In March, we had 24.7% reduction, and we've increased our cumulative down to 7.4%. But since May of 2022, our customers have conserved 9,858 acre feet of water. That's 3.2 billion gallons. But let's focus on the acre feet. I know that's more in line with the committee's metrics. But what I do want to shout out, I want to just kind of make a couple of shout outs here. One, shout out to our conservation staff who have worked diligently through this drought, to this drought emergency, to work with customers, to help them find ways to save water, to comply with the rules, to take long-term conservation, to implement long-term conservation measures. I want to shout out to our communications team who have worked tirelessly to get the message out to the community on what's required of them. I want to shout out to the agency for being committed to conserving during this historic drought. And then, of course, I want to give the biggest shout out to the community for actually taking action to save 9,858 acre feet since May. So actions and next steps on the radar. If for April and May, we're continuing to monitor the regulatory updates to determine whether or not we may want to pull back a stage or, you know, kind of in alignment with the State Water Board's process and timing. We also want to provide recommendations to SCV Water Board of Directors based off of that activity. So we want to come back to the committee with more information as we follow this story towards the either expiration or if they decide to rescind early. We are continuing to promote smart irrigation practices. It's really green out there. It means customers can continue to keep their sprinklers off for the most part or irrigate at a minimum. We are promoting lawn replacement program. That's one of our key components of our strategies today and our strategies tomorrow. We have additional outreach and engagement that we're working on with our Bridgeport Park Demonstration Garden, as well as other efforts with homeowners associations and residents of homeowner associations. We also have commercial engagement we're looking at launching. And we want to evaluate the conservation long-term framework methodologies as we prepare for developing a request for proposals for sustainable water use strategic plan. In addition to that, I kind of jumped ahead. We continue to monitor the state board's action on non-functional turf and waterways prohibitions. And we should also note that I haven't seen the latest update, but the California State Legislature was looking at a couple of different pieces of legislation that would have codified the non-functional turf ban. in some form or fashion. So we'll continue to monitor those. In essence, you know, the work that we've done, the work that our group has done, our agency's done, our community has done, has definitely made it to where together we're making water conservation a California way of life. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions or comments the committee might have.
You know, public in attendance, any questions virtually? And directors, comments, questions? All right. Good job, Matt.
You know, I guess I have a question.
Go ahead.
Hey, Matt. I know it's a tangled web trying to interpret the overlapping executive orders and what was left in place, what was rescinded. And I read the legal memo, saw your PowerPoint. I guess I'm still trying to understand. The emergency still exists. It's still declared. The directive to the state board to set a conservation standard was rescinded, but the state board has not yet rescinded it. Is that correct?
So the state
board rescinded it.
The state board reported on the conservation number, but I'll have to check back to see if they made 15%. That was always a voluntary target. Yeah, but no, the state board's action on the stage two measures is still an act until it's either expired or repealed by the board.
That was my point. So yeah, yeah. We're waiting either on the state board to act or June when that expires, right?
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense, because if they're going to extend the other provisions, those expire in June, in which case, in order to extend them, they'd have to take action in June. So it seems to me that it's lining up that June is going to be a date where they extend the waterways provisions and the non-functional turf ban and repeal the stage two measure requirement. That's what it's trending towards, although they could take action before that.
Well, in that case, looking at the calendar for Water Resources and Watershed Committee, I think it's page 5. Are we looking at if it expires in June? I take June 1st or the last day of June. What's the date that stage two would sunset?
I'm looking at that here. June 16th.
Yeah, it was effective June 16th. Okay. So in that case, you'll be presenting a recommendation on June 14th to the committee meeting for an action at the next regular board meeting, which will be in July 18th. Is that right?
That sounds feasible.
Okay.
I mean, it depends. If the state board comes out in May and goes ahead and says we're going to rescind it.
Yeah,
that moves it along.
Okay, well, either way, we'll hear something from you on the June. It's in July then.
So, one other comment, Matt, because I've heard anecdotally that some HOAs are starting to send letters to people about restoring their turf that they couldn't criticized during the declared drought emergencies. I don't know that they're aware that there still is a declared drought emergency. And it also strikes me that there might be an opportunity to get a targeted marketing message out for lawn replacement that says, before you spend money to replace your turf, take a look at the LRP as an alternative. Because I think people are going to start getting pressure from their HOAs to, you know, spruce things up again, and they're going to be going down and buying sod potentially.
Mr. Stone, it's a great recommendation. We've been meeting with HOAs. As a matter of fact, I've had 7 meetings in the last few weeks with HOAs. We'll continue to engage with them, and we'll send out a notification with an update as to what the executive order means and what it doesn't mean. But I think the idea to have some focused outreach to help manage the boomerang effect certainly makes a lot of sense. We have people's attention. The only challenge to that is with all the rain we've had, as you've probably seen, a lot of that stuff that was brown is now naturally green again. So,
right. Yeah.
But nonetheless, those folks, we can look at that water usage, those folks who took action, and maybe use that to help develop a focused outreach effort.
I know my front lawn looks better than it has ever looked because I never irrigated it to that degree, you know, where it was like constantly flooded. But there are still some patches, you know, that didn't come back, and not too many. But I'll send you something I saw on Nextdoor that somebody's complaining about their HOA sending notices out. There were several Me Too posts. So I don't know, you know, sometimes it's maybe more to it than we know. But
right. Right.
If I had trash in the yard along with the dry grass or the bare grass, but we'll see. Thanks.
Dr. Cooper.
Yeah, Matt. A couple of items. One is at the Aqua board meeting, a number of agencies and Aqua are trying to come up with a new term and get rid of drought because, you know, we've called drought so many times that it's hard to get people to pay attention to it anymore. So they're kind of looking at what is the future of water in California? And it's not drought all the time. And somebody came up with, well, it's a perpetual shortage. And it just, we have perpetual shortages of water in California. But so if you've got any good terms to come up with, something besides drought, let us know because they're really looking for a term. And they want to get rid of it in all of their advertisements and things that they do. And the other is the non-functional turf. The legislation that's been put in up there wasn't working very well. Aqua took a opposed unless amended, and they're working with the legislators to try and come up with the definitions of what is non-functional turf. And it's not that easy to get a definition that meets the needs of everybody. So so if you have any good ideas there as well, and let us know.
They threw some extra little goodies in there too.
Yeah.
As always. As always, the extra goodies.
Director Cooper, thank you for those comments. I will say that we are working with the USC Dornsife Exchange to conduct a conservation communication study that is looking to identify those statements and vocabulary and vernacular that can be more effective and really kind of organically derived from the community to help us improve our communication. As we recognize that in addition to not only is conservation becoming harder to achieve because of the hardening that we've seen in demands and participants, but also the language itself needs to be moved to the next level so that we have, you know, expand our audience and expand our effectiveness. I've seen a lot of legislation on the second point. I've seen a lot of legislation that has kind of got stalled in New Mexico. It was failed in committee. I'm not sure my idea, I think, when I just think about it, which I do sometimes, is to have some sort of process and policy to let communities kind of define the priorities of turf so they can kind of come up with some recommendations, the starting point of what non-functional turf means to them. That may be something that helps communities identify what their values are and their priorities are and then kind of implement it from there. That's a good starting point, but that's a very difficult place to start because our communities vary so differently.
Sure. Good. Thanks.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you. Have a wonderful evening.
All right, we move on to item 6, committee planning calendar, presented by Mr. Cole.
I've got this there for the committee's pleasure. I heard a couple items we need to get on there, so we'll do that going forward. That's all I have.
Okay. Any questions? Any further questions? Directors, any other additions to the planning calendar? All right, I'm 7, adjournment. Thank you, staff. Thank you, directors. We'll see you next time. Meeting adjourned.